Kodak did a they sponsored the films and the photographer and the processing and everything. And I did put together a slideshow, which I still show. I still show it to schools and to the Shriners, because if it wasn't for the Shriners, they were a huge help in my life. I probably would never have been able to walk. So I've taken it around. I like to share that in hopes of, inspiring people to never give up.
Well, hello and welcome to the ADA Shop Talk podcast. I'm your host, Paul Klein. And if you are an ADA coordinator, government official, architect, or accessibility specialist trying to better understand the ADA, then you are in the right place, my friend. The ADA Shop Talk podcast is brought to you by BlueDag. Check out BlueDag's Transition Plan Builder and Inspection Suite over at BlueDag.com for all the great features and solutions we have over there. So another great guest, this guy I've known for a while. He's a fellow rock and roller. Go back to our code official days. I can't even remember. It must have been in the 90s probably that we first met. I can't remember. But Stephen Twist is a good friend of mine. He's the CEO of Stephen Twist Consulting out in California. He's a CASP, Certified Access Specialist. He's also an ICC Plans Examiner. He's been in the code official space and, accessibility CASP space for a long time, and just a good friend and someone I've been acquainted with professionally for a long time. Welcome, Steve. I'm so glad you're here. How you doing?
No, I'm doing good, Paul. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to participate in this.
Yeah, I think people will appreciate your story. You've kind of got a unique story, which we'll get into a little bit later. But man, when was it when we first met? Was it the 90s or the 2000s? I can't even remember. My memory's going bad.
It had to be the early 2000s, actually, because I got into PlanCheck like in right around two after yeah, like I don't 2003.
Okay,
and I stumbled into it actually. I didn't even know what a plan checker was, but I was a heavy equipment operator back then, and it was getting too hard for me to get on and off of equipment. So I went to one of my buddies who runs a big construction company, and he said, "You ought to go be a plan checker." So so I went and applied as a plan checker. I didn't even know what it was, but boy, did I have a learning curve there.
Whew. Yeah, it did. Well, one of the things I always appreciated, and so does Mark, my business partner in CalCasp and BlueDag, is Steve's that guy that, like, he knows all the codes, he's a CASP, he's all that stuff, but you have a disability and have had that for many years. I think when I first met you, you were pretty mobile when I first met you. I mean, and I'll let you explain or share what you like, but my point is that you not only, I think people who have real life experience in challenges with disabilities and have code knowledge are a very unique skill set, and you definitely have that. Tell us a little bit about that if you want to, Steve. It's your personal story, and I know you had a great adventure climbing a mountain, but kind of tell us that backstory and share a little bit about that unique combination that you have.
Yeah, sure. So I guess I could start sort of at the beginning. I got polio when I was 9 months old. And so I walked with crutches and leg braces for years. When I met you, I first started out, I had back braces and leg braces and arm braces. I was pretty braced up at the time. But when I met you, I had one leg brace and two crutches. And that's how I got along till about 10 years ago. And polio has a way of coming back when you get older and does a little bit more destruction.
Yeah.
So the disease sort of progresses, I guess. And so that's when I kind of ended up in a wheelchair after a spider bite that I heard you mention one time. But the spider bite just kind of, it wasn't the spider bite that caused it, but polio syndrome was coming into play. And the spider bite kind of just knocked me down,
aggravated it.
Yeah, I aggravated it. So yeah, and so I I've always walked with crutches and everything, so I've always had that a disability, you know, with it, and but it, I've never let it stop me. You know, I
That's
just
for sure.
I remember saying one time when I was old enough to realize that things were going to be a little different for me, that I said to myself, you know, I'm not ever gonna be a burden to my family, my friends, or my employers. And I was a little kid when I figured that out
Yeah.
and made that little commitment with myself. And as far as I can tell, I haven't done that. So, I mean, I have kept to that commitment.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I climbed Mount Whitney that you started to mention there. And that was not to prove anything. It was actually on a dare, kind of like a beer drinking kind of dare kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where, oh, well, my buddy goes, yeah, well, I'm going to take you and you're going to climb up Mount Whitney. I said, yeah, right. Whatever. So then all of a sudden he shows up with permits because you have to get a permit to climb there. And he gets these permits and it's like, oh, it was like in this like July and we were leaving in October. So I've hit the gym, man, and started working out and getting the best that I could possibly be. And
Yeah.
we got to go up there and ring the bell.
Yeah, I remember seeing the document. Wasn't that part of like a Kodak documentary or something like that, that you did that?
Yeah. Kodak did a they sponsored the films and the photographer and the processing and everything. And I did put together a slideshow, which I still show. I still show it to schools and to the Shriners, because if it wasn't for the Shriners, they were a huge help in my life. I probably would never have been able to walk. So I've taken it around. I'd like to share that in hopes of, you know, inspiring people to never give up.
Yeah. I mean, it was inspiring to me. And I mean, you know, just watching it, it was such a neat story. I remember at one of our, out in California, we had one of the code official meetings and I think you did a presentation and that's when I watched it. And I'd love to be able to put that link in the show notes or maybe even post it in the ADA Shop Talk community. Is it on YouTube still or can we access that?
Well, you know, I have that little video I shared with you that I made. I just kind of banged that out just real fast as a reel or something. But I do have the whole slideshow and I've been thinking about putting it on YouTube and doing a whole, maybe me narrated in the background and show all the slides. I don't have that completed at this point, but maybe there's some way I can get that out because I'd love to share it with people.
Yeah. It's so inspirational. And you know, just think about that, that little kid that was you, but it's now today who might see that or a friend or a cousin or a, you know, an in-law or somebody who just, you know, things happen in their older age. You know, we've had a few other guests on the podcast that, you know, similar stories and, later in life things happen. And, it's that hope and inspiration. That's the world needs more of that. So I would really encourage you. And if I can help with any of that, Steve, let me know. I'm happy to repost it in the community and help spread the word. And I think it'd be a great service to have that out there. Cause I remember it was a touching and emotional, it was emotional for me watching it. And, but in a good way.
Yeah, I think it's cool. It's like I said, it was nothing. I'm not trying to be any virtue signaling or anything like that. It was just a dare, and I took the dare. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's you know it like you said, it's a mindset, you know, and I can't even fathom, you know, nor do I want to speak to, you know, understanding. But I see parallels between yourself and others who've been through similar disabilities. And it's like a trigger, you know, and the once they make that mindset, whether it's when they're little or after a few months or a few years, and they just either, I don't want to call it accepted or whatever, but they find positivity in it. And, like Chris, who I interviewed earlier today, who's going to air, probably around your episode, he was getting married and, a week before he got married and graduated college, he got MS and a debilitating spinal injury and became paralyzed the rest of his life, but he's turned that into a positive and now he's doing great things in the community and in the Greenville, South Carolina area and changing the disability advocacies and climate there in his local community. And so So, so yeah, it gives you hope and, hope and encouragement. And, it's a good thing. World needs more of that. So, but yeah, I appreciate you sharing that, Steve, and we'll help get that out once it comes out and post it. And, we'll put your website and all that stuff and LinkedIn in the show notes, because people hear your story may want to connect with you. But moving on to a few other things, you know, you have that unique both worlds. You know, you have your personal challenges with your disability. You know, so you know the real purpose and meaning of grab bars and curb ramps and parking spaces and hotel rooms and those challenges, but in your mind, you know, what is one of the most difficult challenges when it comes to the ADA in terms of, it could be the codes, it could be you as a user, but what is one of the biggest challenges you have when it comes to the ADA or, you know, disabled access in general?
Well, that's, you know, you opened up the perfect lead in for something I did want to mention. And that is in the code, you know, I think Kaylin stepped into it a little bit. She was saying about how the codes, as good intention as they are and as thorough as they are, don't necessarily work for everybody, mm-hmm. you know, in all circumstances. But one of the things that I've always, that's bothered me from the very beginning is where, if you have a cluster of accessible parking spaces, say like at a Home Depot or something like that, they always put the van one first, closest to the building, closest to the entrance. And inevitably everybody takes that first one first.
Yeah.
So then if you're a van user like I am, and I have to deploy my ramp, I'm losing out on a parking space again. So I always try to encourage architects and engineers, everybody I've ever dealt with, to rethink that.
Yeah.
Put the wheelchair spaces further away, because typically this is not, and again, this is not one size fits all. But typically if you're in a wheelchair, particularly me in a motorized wheelchair, I don't care. It could be out in the South 40. I don't care, you know, because distance is not an issue to me. Whereas if you are walking with crutches or a walker or have a heart condition or something like that, then you appreciate those ones that are closer to the door. Whereas if I have the van one further away, I have a better shot at having a parking space.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the people who, you know, have those other disabilities you mentioned probably don't need the 8-foot access aisle for a ramp.
Correct.
And correct. So, but they're taking the first one because it's the closest, even though it's a van stall. Yeah. That dawned on me before, but your story helps connect those dots. And that's those variables in this whole world of codes and enforcement and CASP and ADA coordinators and everything is there's the regulations and the code. And then there's those gaps and I call them best practices, which kind of comes from the architectural space. And as a consultant, I'll say, well, as a best practice, you should do this. However, I can't make you do that because the code doesn't specifically say that, you know?
Right, right.
But I think offering that up does two things. One is it helps the situation for people with disabilities, like you're mentioning, but also, a little bit selfishly, it gives me some CYA as a consultant, because I can say, hey, I mentioned that it was the best practice. You should have done that. You chose not to do it because it wasn't quote in the code or required. However, you choose not to do it, and now you still got sued. You followed, you know, and I look at best practices as almost like catch 22 solutions to avoiding a lawsuit, because I like those solutions that hit all the points and there's no way to debate it. You know, it's like, it's going to comply. It's going to help people have better access and the business won't get sued. So that's a good one. I hadn't thought about that one, Steve. So
yes, that's the part of the real world, you know, and you're in the, as a user, you know, I know that people that are more able-bodied, it doesn't cross their mind.
Right.
I see it all every day in my life, my kids, everybody, you know, they don't even think about it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas a user, I think about it. And I remember actually back in the day when I was walking and had a pickup truck, and I parked in in an accessible parking space. And I parked in the van one, but this is way back in the 90s or something. And which I never hardly ever used those, but I was at a mall in Santa Rosa, I think. And it was a long ways to walk anyway. So I did take that. And this lady started screaming at me and throwing the fingers at me and everything because I parked in the van space and she had a van. And I thought, what is she yelling at me for? You know, I didn't even realize what I was doing to her.
Yeah.
You know, so it really kind of opened my eyes and it wasn't until I became a cast that I actually figured that out. That's why that lady was yelling at me.
Yeah.
Because she wanted to be able to deploy her ramp, yet my truck was in that parking space.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the same thing happens in the toilets. I'm notorious for that in the airports. I've got my big old bag and my backpack and, you know, it's 35 stalls and then nobody's around and I'm guilty of going in the accessible. They say, don't leave your bag, you know, and you can't leave it out. Yeah, the little ones are so small. And then it's like, well, I try to get in and out of there quickly as I can without being too graphic here. Because you know, you got to keep your, and I think there's, at the access board, they're actually looking at increasing that in airports for that reason, because of the baggage and security. But that's the only, you know, you don't have to have a placard in the toilet room, but it's the same concept. I mean, why use or at a hotel, I had the opportunity to rent a hotel room. They said, oh, we got this room, but it's accessible. I'm like, no, I don't want that room. You know, save that for somebody else. Mm-hmm. Give me something else. I don't care, you know, and it's those little things that are just kind of common courtesy that make a big difference to other people.
Yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned like hotels and, toilet rooms. So I also, one thing I say to a lot of I've gone to hotels and I get the accessible room with the accessible bathroom and everything, but the toilet seat is as loose as it could possibly be.
Mm.
And like if I put certain amount of pressure to transfer and that thing breaks, you know, or something, I'm in trouble. Yeah. I'm in real trouble.
Yeah.
And of course, certainly are they,
you know? Yeah.
But I mean, it's just simple. I mentioned that to a lot of people, about just simple maintenance.
Yeah.
Of things. Don't put trash cans right by the maneuvering clearance at a door. Don't, you know, make sure your toilet seats are bolted down good and secure.
Yeah.
Things like that. Easy things to prevent a lawsuit.
Yeah, exactly. And they make a world of difference for you, because when you got to go, you got to go, and you've got to move trash cans around. Well, and then the business owners or the contractor, well, it's mobile. They can just move it out of the way. Well, it's a big old steel trash can that's full of trash and you got to move it just to go. I mean, that's ridiculous.
When you move it, it's in your way the other way.
Yeah, especially in a small single accommodation restroom. Yeah. But actually, that's something came to my mind. I didn't write this down, but if you don't mind, I'd like to help me and our listeners understand your process, because you're in a power chair, correct, Steve?
Yes.
So when you're out and about on the weekends with your family, maybe you just went to the Tesla concert. You know, I know you like Tesla out there. We both like rock and roll. And afterwards, you guys decide to go have a, you know, go to the brewery or something and have a beer. And then now you've got to use the restroom. When you're looking for a restroom, are you just like us? You just looking for the restroom to go and you don't care? Or are you already thinking ahead? And what cues are you using? The signage that we require, you know, the ISA that's required on signs, what are you using personally, that you know that's in the code that also actually does help you navigate that situation more better?
You know, I don't know that signage is one thing that I really look for.
Mm-hmm.
What occurs more to me, like say in a restaurant or a brewery situation, something like that, is first of all, where is the restroom? Secondly, how am I going to get there?
Yeah.
Because on paper, you look at a plan set and you'll see, oh, they got the tables and the chairs all nice and tucked in and they got the aisle widths look good on paper. But when everybody's actually using the chairs and sitting out and moving away from the table and all that, to navigate your way through that in a chair,
like a maze
the entrance or to the restroom or to wherever, is a challenge. That's the part that, and I don't like, it's really kind of embarrassing to say, oh, excuse me, or people look and they go, oh, and they jump up and get out of your way because they think you're, you know, well, because they, first of all, they kind of need to, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just kind of
It's just,
awkward.
yeah, it's awkward. It's awkward. And so those are the kinds of things I do. Sometimes I get to the restroom. I don't, you know, I look for men or women on the thing. I don't really necessarily look for the accessible signage. But then when I sometimes I'm surprised to get to the restroom and it's not accessible. You know, it's like, because I live up here in the mountains and there's a lot of these old gold mining buildings around here that I can't even get in the bathroom, let alone use it, you know.
So whether it has the ISA, so we architects, code officials, we beat the heck out of ISAs and everything, but in reality, you're just looking for the men's restroom to go, and then once you're in there, you're like, you'll figure it out whether you can use it or not. And you and are you do you use the side and rear grab bar? You know, and again, if I'm prying too deep, I'm just trying, it really helpful to, you know, to understand how we use those things. So anything you're willing to share there without, you know, I don't want to make
Yeah,
you
no.
feel weird here, Steve.
No worry, no, not at all. I mean, I'd rather you ask than wonder, you know. It always bothers me when people just make assumptions instead of asking. It's interesting. God, I hope I answer your question this way. But grab bars, depending on whether it's a right side or a left side, makes a huge difference to me.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Because my body is polio affects different parts of your body in different ways. Like my right hand is completely almost not usable, can't even grab onto things with.
Oh.
Yet my tricep and my right arm is nice and strong. Yet on my left arm, my hand and my forearm are really strong, but the tricep is non-existent. So it's all this determine making me for me to determine what's going to work for me or not. And if it's depending on one side or the other, I have to make some sort of adaptation and may not even use that grab bar. You know what I mean? So it's did I answer your question or
Absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't even think about the left or right. And then do you typically use the rear bar first or the or both or the side bar first?
I typically don't even use any of the bars getting off is where I use them. I grab onto things for leverage and stability.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. Oh, that's super helpful. And I yeah, that makes so much sense. And how about have you ever ran into those ANSI bars, you know, the vertical grab bar?
Yeah, I get in trouble all the time for that because I look at it, and I think you and I've had a discussion about it in the past. And correct me if I'm wrong, but they're not mentioned in ADA or in CBC.
Correct.
And so I can go, well, the only thing I go is that nothing can be, what is it, 12 inches above a grab bar within that 12 inch. It can be above it. So as long as you want to put that grab bar 12 inches above the side grab bar, the horizontal bar, then I'm okay with it in a plan, say in a plan check situation. I think they're great. I think they should be there, but the code doesn't,
Yeah, it's silent. Yeah,
it's silent on
there
that.
is an exception in both the ADA and the CBC that says the associated accessories, there's an exception to allow grab bars. So grab bars can, and if you follow the 39 to 41 height for the vertical grab bar, you're gonna technically violate that 12 inch above the side grab bar. Even in ANSI, you would, but there's a specific exception in both the ADA and the CBC that allows you to have more grab bars. So that's how I interpret it, and I don't look at it as a violation because they do help people. And I think that's kind of what I was asking more so is from a personal perspective. Do you, when you do see the vertical grab bar, does that help at all, or is it
Yes.
okay? Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it should be there.
Yeah.
I think it should be more clear in the code as to the use of them and that sort of thing. Because a foot above the grab bar to me is I don't know that I need all that clear space.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Enough room for my hand and my arm to get in there on top of the grab bar and that sort of thing. But 12 inches above, I think they could even lower that.
Yeah.
I think it would
and be fine. And you're able to use it and it actually helps you. I've heard that before. So it's interesting, you know, and I work not just in California, I work all over the United States. And so they're very prevalent in the Midwest and the West Coast or East Coast. And so, that's super helpful. Yeah. That's codes are codes, but, how you actually use them are a whole nother ball game. And then, what else was I going to ask you? This always comes up. This is an assumption that I always make as a code official. And I think a lot of us inspector built environment code rangers, I'm putting myself in that all in that category, have kind of accepted and heard that, you know, like if you were to rent a hotel room, you know, do you prefer tubs or do you prefer showers? I would assume you would prefer a roll-in shower. But can you confirm or deny which one of those is better for you personally?
That's interesting. I prefer the shower, cause I can roll in, scoot over onto the seat and then close the curtain to block my chair from getting soaked by the shower.
Yeah.
If that happens, it starts messing with the electronics. So, I appreciate that. But then again, that comes into what side is the seat on? Is it a left-handed side or a right-handed side?
Yeah.
Cause all that makes a difference for me. As far as the tub, it used to be, before my disease progressed to where it is now, it was that was actually maybe even easier to use because I could just, you know, the I don't know, just because of my mechanics,
yeah,
the way that to transfer was maybe even easier. It's just the things that are not easy are the wobbly seats.
Yeah, I was wondering about the little freestanding plastic gizmos.
The hotel, they'll give it to you and they say, oh yeah, here's your accessible seat. Well, that depending on where you put your weight on that thing, it can tip right over on you. It's not like I speak for myself. I don't put equal pressure in the right spots on things. You know what I mean? If I can put my pressure might be on the outside edge where it could tip right over.
Yeah.
So they, I kind of laugh when they give you these little plastic wobbly seats.
Yeah. Those things are pathetic. And that's where a nice, you know, some good, 2x12 backing with some good lag bolts into a fold down, you could really, you know, we're big guys, you know, 200 pounds, probably I'm speaking for myself, you know, not that but I mean, people like us, big statured people, you know, need that for stability. And so having that built in is so much better.
Yeah. I like things secure.
Yeah.
I don't like things wobbling around.
Yeah. Especially with water and electronics and you're out of your element, your home, you know, and you don't want to have to call paramedics or something to, you know, for help. Right. No fun for anybody. So no, thank you for sharing that, Steve. I know those are kind of personal questions and everything, but you as a code person, I think can appreciate where, you know, especially for those of us that don't experience that, you know, we're all trying to make the best decisions with the codes and the standards, but man, when we can connect the dots with people with real disabilities and make better decisions, I think is super important. So thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. But let's switch gears a little bit. One of the things I know you do a lot of work in, probably, you know, you do code consulting for code agencies, building departments, code officials and things like that. But there's a lot of effort nationwide that I'm seeing, especially, you know, our careers have traversed a long time, but it seems like there's been a lot better awareness, if you will, on Title II agency obligations to do their transition plans and their self-evaluations. Finally, after, you know, 30 years or whatever, you know, they're finally getting with it. I think some of that is the DOJ withholding funding and going after some of these agencies, but for ADA coordinators, a lot of ADA coordinators listen to the show and so forth. You know, what are some tips that you have or advice? I don't know how much work you've done in that space, but just your initial thoughts as a professional that could help an ADA coordinator or a new ADA coordinator in a city or county try to help move their initiatives along a little faster.
Well, I think taking it seriously, first of all, I think it becomes this in some of the some of the jurisdictions I've worked in, one in particular, the ADA coordinator was a civil engineer who worked in public works and did drainage and highway and street lights, and he's the ADA coordinator. Well, first of all, he doesn't have the expertise necessarily, and or the interest. It's one of those things that he just puts on the back shelf, and they maybe talk about it once every 6 months or something like that, and nothing really moves. And I see these, you see it, you see it in all kinds of jurisdictions, where, and I see it particularly because I may need, like, I go to people's houses. There's people's houses I don't even go to because I can't use the sidewalks and the street. The curb ramps are not there. And these are in cities where that stuff is supposed to be taken care of, and the transition plans are so behind, and they don't, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that a DOJ thing? And they will, the DOJ requires that and can nail the city for that,
Yeah,
right? Or the
absolutely.
jurisdiction. That's what I thought. So, and I explain that to these people, and I say, hey, you should be, come to me, come to talk. I was a contractor at the last jurisdiction I worked at. And so I wasn't really a city employee necessarily, but, I said, come to me. I'm willing. I've got the credentials. I know what this is supposed to do here. I'm happy to help. And even though that wasn't what I was hired there to do necessarily, or contracted to do, but I was seeing it not get done, and it was getting done wrong, and even some of the standard details, like for pro ag type of details, are wrong still, and they still got like the 12-inch groove borders on them and things like that, which has been gone for a while
Long
now.
time. No, that's super helpful. And you know that there's a lot of levels of effort between cities and counties. I've seen some really proactive ones, even out in the south, where you'd think it wouldn't be. And then I've seen in California where you'd think it'd be more proactive, agencies out there just ignoring it. And having the public works engineer, they just want to mow everything over with asphalt and concrete. That's the solution for everything. But they're engineers, and so they don't really get the other side of it. And I think that's where bringing in your local advocacy group or a housing authority or your disabled advocacy groups to help prioritize your city's initiatives is super helpful, because one, it helps you serve the constituents that you're supposed to be serving, and then they help you prioritize those. And if you're challenged, you can tell the DOJ, hey, we included our community organizations on all these decisions here, and they're going to be like, oh, okay, well, you're good then. So yeah, you didn't get 100% compliant, but at least you involved the constituents that are most affected, and they had a voice at the table on those decisions, and so you're less likely to get the book thrown at you, if you will, by the DOJ. So,
It's funny how you're, like you said, you'd think in California they would be all over that. But it's some of the areas in California are some of the worst I've ever seen.
That's true. That's true. I've had the opportunity to travel around, and I don't use it to the extent, but you're probably like me, sitting in the bathroom or at a hotel or a lobby, you're always looking at, the elements of it. I'm sure you when you go out to eat, you're like, okay, is that table accessible? That door wide enough? It's missing the strikes. I mean, we do that. And I do that as I fly around. And I mean, like, Orlando is a pretty accessible city, especially with Disney. They've had a lot of initiatives there. But New York, yeah, Manhattan, it's like San Francisco, it's like pretty, it's just so old and that's hard and stuff. But yeah, it is what it is. And that's the beauty of this whole profession, is that it's a work in progress. But I like to feel like we're making think about where we were in the early 2000s to now. I mean, we didn't have CAS, we didn't have the 2000 ADAS, you know, there and all the technology things. I mean, even your chair is probably more advanced than it was back then, you know, with the new batteries.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking, man, if we didn't have the technology that we have today, I would be in big trouble.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have the mobility that I have at all. My ramp in my van, you know, that pops out and it all works with a key fob. I have seats that twist around so I can slide out of my wheelchair into my driver's seat and spin back around into the driver's position. I mean, all that technology is fairly new.
Yeah. It wasn't there 25 years ago. And I think the advent of, especially the, you know, Tesla and the battery technology has just gotten so much better. I think that's probably helped. Cause I think the old, lifts, you know, probably were big old hydraulics, like you'd have on your hip, you know, your graders and, you know, big old oil cylinders that weighed the thing down to 10,000 pounds per side probably. And now that's a good thing. Well, let me ask a couple more questions. We'll close out here, Steve. I know you're busy doing, consulting and got work to do. So, last two questions here. What are there any ADA resources that you use on a regular basis, you know, that you could turn some of our listeners onto, that you might use?
Well, you know, not to put you on the spot, but I loved it when you guys at CalCasp used to, PDF the code section, like 11B and 11A, because I use that all the time. And I use the older one that I think 2019 might have been the last one you guys did. And what I do, I love it because of the search mechanism.
Yeah.
And I can highlight stuff and comment and put my own stuff in there, make it my own. But I go to that, find what I'm looking for, and then I'll pop onto a current code, you know, the like 2022 codes.
Yeah.
And then go make sure nothing changed.
Yeah.
So
you and I do the same exact thing. And Mark wrote the book, but, I was part co-conspirator in that. And, a lot of people have asked for that. We do have the 2010 ADAS, which is a very searchable, more user-friendly than the DOJ's version. So if anybody wants that, actually, I'll just put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, dude, that's I use it all the time, man. Yeah. It's so helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can get around in it really fast.
Yeah. The DOJ one, they lock down or it's secure. You can't word search. And then ours is hyperlinked. So you can click on the code section. It'll take you to that code section and then go right back. So that was I wasn't intending to have a self-glossing resource here. You know, so some of my guests will say that, or they'll say Blue Dag, and I don't want that. It's like, you know, I just didn't know. I didn't know if there was like, if you use UpCodes or maybe Builder's Books for anything, or if there's any other kind of resources out there. I'm always searching for new ones. So if there's anything out there.
I use UpCodes all the time. That's the one I use more than anything. And of course, you know, I have PDF versions of the FHA and all those things too, that I bounce around through. And I think on your last podcast with Kaylin, you guys mentioned the access board, and I think you were talking about it in one of your podcasts recently. And I've now subscribed to them, and I'm going in there and looking at some of their videos and their training things. And Sumo has actually mentioned some of that to me when I've called her about some technical things that we're both stumped about. She go to the access board, see what they say. So I am new to I mean, I've known it's existed, of course, but I didn't use it as much as I do now.
Yeah.
I use it. I'm starting to use it more, and because it gives you a really good basis and foundation of where this stuff starts.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. Cause the access board they're the ones that wrote all that stuff. And then, so that's the foundation for what DOJ adopts and then ultimately states. So if you can go back to the original intention and even go back and read some of their, the comments, you know, during the development of those standard or the guidelines, you can kind of understand the intent and see if you're going haywire. So that's when we become true code ADA code nerds, when we start reading, the stuff behind the guidelines, and you're committed and, need a patch.
You know, and it's interesting too. I even though I've been in this for quite a while now, I'll have a discussion with an architect, say, for example, a designer or somebody, and we'll be discussing a particular code issue, and they'll say, "Well, what about this part?" And I'll go look at that and I go, "Man, I've read that 1,000 times and never saw it." You know what I mean? It's a constant learning thing.
That's for
That's
sure.
one thing. I would encourage everybody to not think you know it all, because there's so much in a code book, and the fine little details, the exceptions, those things, changes everything.
Yeah, that's
Scoping.
so sure. Yeah. You go down a path of thinking how something was the way it was, and then you realize you've been reading it wrong for
Right.
many years.
Right.
And it's like, oh no. So it's a continuous improvement,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
I agree with you there. So, well, last question for you before we go here is, you've had a many years as a code official and, enforcing the ADA and accessibility provisions in the state and the local, as well as using the features and the elements in those codes. But what was one of your biggest mistakes or learning lessons that you had when applying the ADA over the years, or accessibility requirements over the years? One of your biggest mistakes or learning lessons you had?
Well, I can't remember the specific one, but I remember when I first started out in plan checking, I was really kind of thrown in there with the lions. And like I said, I didn't even know what a plan checker was when I first started looking at it. And I was thrown in there, and I was going off of a list that they gave me and trying to find that on the plans and doing this kind of thing. And I'd make calls that I didn't really know what I was talking about. And then I'd have a contractor or an architect or somebody chewing me out because I was saying something I didn't know what I was talking about. That's probably the biggest thing, a specific thing I can't think of, but definitely. And ever since then, what I do, if I'm in a opining on something or reviewing something, I always attach a code section to my explanation, always. And I look everything up, even though I've again read it 1,000 times probably. I still go back and reread it and make sure, and I put my code section, here's where I'm coming from on this, and go about it that way,
That's good advice. Being able to have the code path to your decision, and the scoping section, the technical section, and everything flows together so you can connect the dots. And so, that's good advice. You start making up your own code, you can get in trouble. So,
Oh boy, I see that a lot too.
yeah. Well, thank you so much, Steve, for coming on. How can people get in contact with you if they want to reach out to you? What's the best way?
Well, you can go to my website, steventwist.com. You can also find me on YouTube. I've got a couple of YouTube videos that I'm working on trying to improve on that. Probably the best way. Yeah, my website's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Okay. Steventwist.com. Steventwist.com. I'll put the link to that and the YouTube and the other resources we mentioned in here. So, I really appreciate you coming on the show, Steve. I know it's time out of your day and everything. I'll be out your way at the end of next month, and I'll probably be in your area for several days before I head down south. So maybe we can get together for an adult beverage and some music or something.
That sounds great, man. Yeah.
All right, Steven Twist, everybody, thank you so much for coming on the show. That's the show for today. Appreciate all of you, and keep up the great work of what you do, and go out there and make the world a better place. Until next week, have a great day. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.